Calling all detectives. Putting prizes in merchandise packages is an old stunt. But when the prizes are precious jewels, that's a new wrinkle. That is the situation on this page from my casebook. The casebook of Jerry Browning, private detective. Let me, Jerry Browning, private detective, tell you about my sweetest case. The box of candy came by parcel post. I opened it, found a plain white card simply signed Joe. But I didn't know any Joe, so I examined the wrappings. The label was neatly typed with my name, my office address, and bore the imprint of the best ever candy company. Well, a private detective can't be too careful, so... Cliff, I'd like you to do a chemical analysis for me. Right, Jerry. What's the matter? Somebody feeding one of your clients pie, Ella arsenic? I'm the client. I'd like to know if there's any hanky-panky with these chocolates. Cliff grinned, took the candy, and went to work. Colloidal test. Check. Precipitate. Check. Milk solids. Dextrose. Vanillin. Vegetable oil. This stuff is chocolate candy, Jerry. With nothing added, huh? Not in the pieces I check. Well, let's do one more sample on one of these buttercreams. Cliff cut into it, but not all the way. He couldn't. The center resisted his knife. He poked into it, fished out something the size of a small pebble, washed off the cream covering the stone. Hey, this kind of poison I wouldn't mind getting. Jerry, whoever sent you the candy forgot to mention they put real diamonds in the buttercreams. When I had a mysterious gift of candy analyzed, I learned that one of the pieces contained a valuable diamond. The clerk in the best-ever candy shop had to leap through a stack of back orders to find the one with my name in it. It had been placed a week and a half before, and the name of the sender was Justin O. Everett. Did you send me a box of best-ever candy? Why, sure, Browning. Just a little extra thanks for the way you uncovered those missing bonds. Well, thanks, but... How did the name Joe get on the card, Mr. Everett? I phoned that order in, gave him the message, and said to sign it J-O-E, my initials. A phone order, huh? And you never saw the candy? No, of course not. I've got a charge account with Best Ever. Oh. Oh. Well, thanks again, Mr. Everett, and so long. I drove back to the Best Ever Candy Company, but this time I headed for the factory. In the president's office, Mr. Archer... I have reason to believe your company is in for serious trouble.
Trouble? You don't know the half of it, Browning. Look at these telegrams and letters. The people of this city are insane.
Archer pointed to his littered desk.
Claim they found glass in our product. One guy, an actor, broke a tooth. He wants $100,000 in damages. I tell you, the world's crazy.
Not so crazy, Mr. Archer. Your buttercreams were loaded with diamonds.
Ridiculous. We manufacture under a double-A sanitary rating. Our chocolate is imported from... Did you say diamonds?
Yeah. Somebody added an extra ingredient to your buttercreams. Diamonds. Archer gulped.
Mr. Browning, you're a detective. Please find out who's responsible for this outrage.
I took the case straight to the police.
Missing diamonds? Sure, we're on the lookout for a flock of them. Week ago Thursday night, Conway and Lark and the wholesale jewelers was busted into. Thief got away with a bunch of unsorted stones. A burglar alarm went off all right. Our boys chased the guy, but he got away.
Did anyone get a look at him?
Nope. All we know is that he was a young guy. Must have been. He jumped a high fence, lost us in the vicinity of Troop and Commerce Streets. We threw a cordon around the whole district, but the guy must have slipped through.
Thanks, Sarge. I may have something for you real soon. Driving back to the factory, I knew I had three leads, all pointing in the same direction. One, the best ever candy factory was at the intersection of Troop and Commerce Streets. Two, when somebody's being pursued, he reverts to animal, holes in at the place he knows. Three, anyone who didn't belong in the factory would stick out like the proverbial sore thumb. Conclusion? The diamond thief was an employee of the best ever candy factory. Are these big vats, are they always filled like this with batches of caramel and cream?
That's right, sir. I'm an inspector here. Ted Bowen's my name. I can tell you all about the mix. You see, these machines operate by centrifugal force and they...
I had to hold still for Bowen's lecture on candy mix and making. And what it yielded was exactly what I'd already figured out. The panicky thief had flung the diamonds into a vat of buttercream filling. The automatic machinery had fed cream and stones to the dippers, and the finished product had gone all over town. I checked with the company's personnel manager.
We have 200 employees, Mr. Browning. Women workers? 60%.
60% of 200 left 80 men as possible suspects. Of this group, half worked the night shift.
On the night in question, Mr. Browning, there was no absenteeism.
Okay. So if 40 men were on the job the night of the robbery, then 40 others from the day shift were on the loose. Once I figured out who the guilty man was, I'd be sure to find somebody who'd remember seeing him in the plant that night. So I started reasoning. 28 men of the day shift were office workers. I eliminated them since any one of them showing up at night would have been instantly noticed. 28 from 40 leaves 12. Of these 12, I canceled out another 7. Elderly men without the strength or agility to vault high fences and outrun cops. That narrowed the field to 5 men. Bob Smith, Cy Johnson, Wally Murdoch, Harry Mooney, and Ted Bowen. I got their stories for the evening of the robbery, checked alibis. Every alibi checked. I was fresh out of suspects and fresh out of reasoning. The next evening, I was back at the candy factory, ready with some nice new reasoning. Namely, that one of the men on the night shift was guilty. Somebody who had managed to leave his job long enough to pull the robbery and get back without being missed. It wasn't much of a theory, but it was the best I could manage at that point. Ted Bowen, the inspector, came over to me.
Hello, Mr. Browning. What brings you back here?
Something I can't seem to figure out, Ted. How a man could leave a machine for an hour or more without being missed.
That's impossible, Mr. Browning.
I nodded. Yeah, I guess it... Ted, aren't you on the day shift?
Why, yes, but when a new batch is being mixed late in the day, I have to stay over and see it through. Doesn't happen very often.
I stepped up to him. Bowen, I'll bet it happened a week ago Thursday. The night a jeweler was robbed. You did that job, and the reason nobody here noticed anything strange was because they're used to seeing you on both shifts. The only person in the plant who can come and go day or night without being questioned. I tried to make a break for the door, but I was expecting that. Yep. He was guilty, of course. Though he didn't admit it until his thumbprint matched up with the one print the cops had found. He thought the robbery would be a cinch. And when it proved far from that, he lost his head, ducked back to the plant, and got rid of the loot in the vat of candy mix. Like I said, crime may look as easy as taking candy from a kid. But don't be fooled. A crook always turns out to be the all-day sucker.